Dave Garamella, your host for The Philanthropist, and I am really, really excited about this week's guest. And I know I say that all the time, but it's true. I get to talk to some really amazing, amazing people from all sorts of different not-for-profit kind of genres, and they're doing just great things, even in the midst of COVID, right? They are just taking what's thrown at them and making lemonade. So we're going to have a great conversation today. So it's not only a philanthropy leader we're meeting with, but she's also a great friend and someone I've known in the industry for way, way too long. Kelly Rafferty, who's the Director of Philanthropy and Community Engagement at the Mary and John Elliott Charitable Foundation up in Manchester, New Hampshire. All right, Kelly, what's going on? Tell us about yourself.
Well, thank you, Dave. Yeah, we have been colleagues and friends now for a really, really long time.
Absolutely.
So I have just reached, I think, my 25th anniversary of working in healthcare philanthropy, which is really amazing.
That is.
I started at the American Cancer Society so many years ago and had an amazing career there for 14 years. And then was lucky enough to be able to work at Bay State Health in Springfield, Massachusetts. And then life took me here to New Hampshire. And I have been with the Elliott Health System now for, it'll be almost 4 years, which is great. So it being in a community hospital in Southern New Hampshire is really exciting. I think that's what I love about hospital philanthropy is you can raise money for so many different things. We just opened a new cancer center. Yesterday, I was talking with our COO and our director of surgical services on some equipment that they're going to need this year. So the diversity of being able to raise money for a hospital is totally intriguing, and I love it every single day.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing this. You're doing great things. You just had a successful campaign. I know we were talking kind of before the taping that you've had some great, great gifts come in recently. So is everything status quo? Are there any challenges? Or are you just kind of plugging away? And this is just a great call just to say hello.
Yeah, no, it's what's, it's been interesting. You know, I've talked with other colleagues, and I think you and I have also talked about this, that, you know, I don't think we ever thought that we would have something that was more challenging than 9/11.
Right.
And the stock market crash. Mm-hmm. And how we came out of those two circumstances, or even like Hurricane Katrina. But with COVID, I mean, this is just a whole other level. For us on the front lines with hospitals, you know, our community has stepped up this year in ways that we just couldn't imagine. Our staff, have not wanted for, extra meals or morale boosts, from our community. When we were first dealing with COVID and we didn't have the right PPE or the right PPE for this virus. You know, we had people in Southern New Hampshire make over 10,000 masks for our hospital. And there are four hospitals in Southern New Hampshire.
Okay.
So it was this unique ability for the community to really help support our staff. But within that, yeah, we literally were launching the community phase of our capital campaign on January 30th. And then the close happened on March 13th. But we were able to raise about $1.5 million for our campaign in that time frame, which was great. So we actually exceeded our initial campaign goal by just over 2.6 million. So we raised 12.6 million. It was amazing. So now it's how do we continue to pivot coming out of a capital campaign,
sure,
into the other needs that we have, but we're still in a COVID world. So it's definitely challenging in terms of how do we continue to engage our community for the needs that we have. But I think as hospitals, you know, people don't understand, well, why do hospitals raise money? You know, so really educating our community around who we are as a nonprofit and what that means.
So lots of stewardship, lots of cultivation and qualification of why people want to give to your, now do you consider yourself, and I know you've said it a couple of times, a community hospital? Do you consider yourself kind of a smaller system now, because you're doing, it's not just the hospital itself.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, if you compare ourselves to our neighbors just to the south in Massachusetts,
sure,
you know, we're a two hospital system. Our system is new. We formed almost 3 years ago.
Okay.
But we're the largest in the state of New Hampshire, even though we also, to the north of us, in the middle of the state, we have an academic medical institution, mm-hmm. Which is part of another system. You know, it's a very competitive landscape here in New Hampshire and here in Manchester, not only because, you know, we're unique in that there are 26 hospitals in the state. Many of them are small critical access hospitals, but there's, you know, a lot of competition in the hospital space. Most of them are nonprofit, not all, but most are nonprofit hospitals. Like us and like our partner at Southern New Hampshire Health.
I heard, and I think you'll find this kind of amusing and amazing at the same time. It was a podcast. It was a hospital CEO, a community hospital CEO in New England. And he had made a statement, and I've kind of backed it up, that if you walk outside of any hospital in New England, within our region, and you go less than a mile, you will be in another hospital service area.
Yes.
So it is hyper, hyper, hyper competitive from a, you know, a delivery, delivery of care options. And that translates obviously into philanthropy. You had made a point when we first started talking about potential similarities to the financial crisis in 2008, Katrina, 9/11. And, you know, I kind of swarmed around that at the beginning of COVID and looked at, you know, what I saw with our partners and when I was on, you know, your side of the fence as an active gift officer. And I thought it was going to be like those kind of disasters and what happened. And there was this initial push to give. And, but then it kind of fell off and there was this quiet abyss of no one giving because no one knew what was going on. At least in healthcare, I have not seen that.
I agree with you. I think, you know, there's still so much uncertainty. And I think that, you know, people also want to be able to support small businesses.
Correct.
As well. But I think those of us in healthcare, it really has brought to the forefront how much you need a strong hospital in your community.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that's important for us to continue to steward with all of our donors, you know, in-kind donors, financial donors. You'll remember our good friend, Robbie Cohn, down in Greenfield.
Absolutely. Best campaign chair I ever got to work with. Volunteer
I know.
Campaign chair.
Exactly. But he said something that has always stuck with me. And it is that you don't want to have to go there, but you want to have the strongest hospital in your community.
Absolutely.
And that to me is so critically important. And so no matter what the type of giving is that people are giving to healthcare institutions, you know, every bit of that really helps. And so that's been the real silver lining of this crisis. And even though, you know, we're in our sort of new event season, and we're extremely cautious about how we're going to handle our event season. We have like four contingencies for every single event. Because we have to hold ourselves to the higher standard of safety, being a hospital with our special events. Most of our events this coming year are going to be outside and socially distanced. But, you know, we're finding that people still want to give. They're just giving at a slightly lower level. They're not saying no, though, which is a really important thing for us to be focused on right now.
Important that you're doing these events from a, and I always hate this term, friend raising, but keeping your stakeholders involved. At the same time, I see this challenge. You're coming out of a successful campaign, and how do you keep your major donors understanding, especially if they paid their pledge off early or they're completely done, that's great. We're doing these events. It's important. COVID is important. We want those preparedness funds, but look at these other things we need, right? Name it, cardiac, orthopedics, it does not matter. And so making sure that you and your team are consistently kind of re-energizing your case for support or having multiple cases for support, depending on the situation and who your donors are.
Yeah, exactly. We're still raising money for our cancer center, both at a major gift level, but then with our cancer walk. So, cancer is still a very significant project for us, but we also have another major construction project that is going to be coming to our hospital. It's not a formal capital campaign, but we are leveraging some of our other special events to support that, as well as our annual appeal. But then there are other capital needs of equipment or program support that we need to fund. So it's that diversity of fundraising that I think will be attractive for different people in our community support to be able to support different things.
Are you running into challenges because you're coming out of a campaign, keeping that urgency and that philanthropy is important from your C-suite or your top, maybe non-fundraising volunteers that have still, kind of helped you along in this process?
We're extremely fortunate to have a strong culture of philanthropy throughout our senior leadership, but through all levels of our staff. We have incredible staff giving through our annual appeal, which is great. And our senior leaders are incredibly philanthropic, but they also see the value of what it is that we bring to the organization and our board. So, we're in a unique position with our foundation because we have our own board and then we have our system board Elliott. And then there's our Solution Health board as well. And we have that strong philanthropy connection to all the parts of our organization, which I know is not always the case. So we're lucky in that they are all incredibly supportive out in the community talking about the things that we're doing and being part of our events and being part of giving. So I think that definitely helps. And as that's been one of the real dynamic challenges or changes, I should say, with grant funding is that's a major question now, is what percentage of your senior leadership and your board are giving? So we're in really good shape in terms of that and having them build relationships.
Well, on that with funders, there's been this, there's so many new funders, funny enough, that will support healthcare that haven't in the past because of COVID.
Yes.
But then some of our kind of tried and true foundations that we'll go to have backed off, at least from a dollar perspective. So it's creating kind of gaps and challenges in programs that depended on those foundation funds. What we're seeing is that having that strong board that cares about, what you all are doing from your foundation or your fundraising team and call, picking up the phone or sending the email to somebody they know on that foundation board or someone else who's received funding and has a good relationship with the funder has been the difference. And
oh, that's how— absolutely. You know, I think about our capital campaign. You know, we were in the quiet phase and publicly launched our capital campaign on January 30th and then March 13th, lockdown. So we never really did a traditional community campaign for the capital campaign. But prior to that, we were stewarding the grant relationships for several important grant funders. And it was our senior leadership and it was our board leadership who helped to cultivate those relationships because these were new funders to us. They were part of the tours as they were doing the site visits, you know, as they looked at our grant application. And I really do believe that that collaborative relationship with our senior leaders and our board members are really what helped us to secure those grant funders.
Good for you.
We really saw that commitment.
Well, you know, we talk about that, and I, you know, sometimes I'll say that to a partner, and it almost comes out as if it's just theory. But to hear, you know, you say that, I think just adds the credibility that you need to develop those relationships, or it's just it's a scattered approach, and it just doesn't work.
Right. Yeah. In community-based fundraising, community members want to hear from their neighbors, you know, their friends that they're giving to the organization. So in a community like Manchester, you know, we're the largest city in New Hampshire, but we're a really small state. Manchester feels more, you know, like a small town in many ways.
Okay.
And, you know, we have 110,000 people who live in Manchester and, you know, and then the surrounding communities that choose the Elliott for their healthcare. But because we're so small, you know, they want that connection to our board members and to our senior leadership because they see them at the, you know, pre-COVID, they see them at the gym, they see them at the coffee shop, they see them at restaurants. And I do really think that that has made a huge difference for us.
Good for you. Good for you. Can I ask, this is something I hear on a regular basis now, not just in New England, West Coast folks, middle of the country folks, that they're being pulled in other directions outside of philanthropy, whether it's, I don't know, you know, managing COVID testing parking lots and working the cafeteria. I've heard all kinds of things, which is amazing, right? Because it allows you all from a foundation perspective to get to know your colleagues on the clinical side. But it's taken away with what, you know, you're paid to do.
You know, it's funny because, I mean, you and I talk regularly. And I'm not sure, I think you know part of this. So it's interesting you're asking the question because in June, I took on, I was asked to take on the responsibility of managing, which I think makes sense. Our volunteer services now reports up through me.
Okay.
Right now, we literally, out of 200 volunteers, we have two volunteers working in the hospital right now.
All right. Because of COVID.
And I'm now, you know, the second part of my title is community engagement. So I am actually now working on our board designated goals of looking at the social determinants of health within our community here in Manchester. My colleague in Nashua is doing the same. So, you know, what are we doing in our community to make an impact on the overall health of our community? And the community benefit reporting falls under me now. So yes, it is the sort of the other duties as assigned. We've been involved in now, you know, we are gonna be, you know, helping to support the vaccine site here in Manchester. My colleague is doing this
in Nashua.
It's happening.
So then the challenge back to you is you really need to become even like a super educator on the importance of the philanthropic perspective, whether it's the press for more budget, more gift officers, because otherwise, at the end of the day, your goals will not change, right? Your metrics on what needs to be raised and what the system deserves to receive from philanthropy is still there. Been doing this a long time, and you know, it's sort of like Groundhog Day over and over again. If you don't spend the time doing the fundraising, you're not going to raise the money. And
right, exactly. You know, and for us, you know, I am incredibly lucky to work with an incredible philanthropy team. We're small, but we're mighty. I think we have the right structure of who is in what role for us.
That's great to hear.
Absolutely. Because you need to have the right people in the right job. And how you structure yourself, because there's only six of us, you know, so we have a grant officer. We have someone who's focused on our stewardship and our annual appeal. We have an events manager. You know, we have an amazing admin. And then we have another member of our team who's in charge of our cancer walk. And she came over to us from the marketing team, and her focus is on the community engagement work. So it paired well with her managing the walk and engaging people in our walk for cancer. So we've got a good structure. You know, I'm doing the major gift.
Oh, all right. That's great. But now I'm like, and Miss Kelly has 57 other things on her agenda. How the heck are you out there as the gift officer, and how do you manage a portfolio?
Well, you know, I mean, I think that the work and the foundation that was laid with our capital campaign and the relationships that I was able to build is what is helping with that. I will also say, and this was true, you remember this from our time at Bay State Health, having really strong volunteer leadership support is critical. And I was so lucky to be able to have that again here for our campaign. We have the best campaign chairs. They know everybody in the community. They're a legacy family, you know, for the Elliott. They're incredibly dynamic and really helped to catapult our campaign to achieve what it did. So, you know, leveraging that work and the relationship I have with them, I think is why we're able to keep all the balls
everything
up
juggling. Yep. They're not falling on your head. All right.
So far they're not.
Wear a hard hat.
Yeah.
All right. So this has been a great conversation. You all are doing some amazing, amazing things. You make me nervous, though, that you're doing so many things and from a gift officer perspective, but that's all right. That's an opportunity, I think, moving forward. Your numbers are there. You press to get somebody to handle, whether it's that gap giving, that $1,000 donor, or even to help you with those other things, and you're going to be fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Any parting words of wisdom for us?
You know, I think the main thing that has always been true across, you know, my career, but really came to light over the course of the last year, is it's all about relationships. It's all about, you know, building really strong communication with your leadership and with your donors and with your community at large. And you know, we're storytellers. We're
I love to hear that, but that's so
100%. True. That's what philanthropy is about. It's about relationship building and about storytelling. And we've had probably the most compelling story to tell in healthcare ever. And you know, to be able to bring outside of the four walls of the hospital the work that our entire healthcare team is doing every single day is really important. And how can we continue to tell that story after we get beyond COVID? Because it's just been amplified, the work that they do every day, taking care of people in our community. So, you know, having a strong culture of philanthropy and strong relationships, you're able to weather any storm.
Thank you for that. Thank you for sharing that. Well, as one of St. Anselm's finest, Kelly Rafferty.
Thank you for having me.
No, thank you for being on our podcast. Again, I'm David Garamella. I am the CEO and principal of the Giving Collaborative, and you've been listening to our this week's edition of The Philanthropist. If you're interested in being a guest or you have an issue that you would like us to tackle moving forward, please reach out to us at info@givingcollaborative.com. Thank you all. Be safe.